home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
And we are here again. I'm Rob.
And I'm Garrett, and we're back on Rated LGBT Radio. We are coming to you live at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time tonight, a half an hour early because we have a VIP extraordinarily important guest to be bringing on, Erica Irvin. She'll be joining us in just a couple of moments. But as we do every week before we get started, I always want to give you a rundown of where we've been for the week and where we're going. So that way, if you'd like to follow the show, if you're a first-time listener, you can click that follow button right there on your computer, and you can stay in touch with the show wherever we go and whatever flavor or format that we're at. Monday, we had Dr. Annie Ulrich. She shared her May energy update and also took some listener calls. On Tuesday, we had LGBT author Brandon Witt. He's got a new book called Under a Sky of Ash, and I loved it. And I've got about 14 more pages, and I've got to read it tonight at the end of the show because I've got to figure out how the book ends. But Brandon Witt was a spectacular guest. We're actually going to have him back on in October when he has a new book out as well. And that was Tuesday's show. Yesterday, one of the things that I'm working on right now, Rob, is I'm turning the show into a morning show, and a couple of my guests have been able to transition their schedules a little bit, and frankly, they go, we like that a lot better. So on Wednesday's show, live from the UK, so it was really like 4 o'clock in the afternoon in London, I had psychic Sue Davy on the line, and Sue took listeners' calls, and it was funny because sometimes on the show, we have recurring characters, meaning people who call the same show or every single show when we have a psychic and they ask the same question every single time. Well, we have a couple of those. And this is the pot calling the kettle black because anytime, you know, I always call them the fun guest on. I would say, okay, give me a mini reading and tell me about this or that or the other thing. And it's funny because they all consistently tell me exactly the same thing. So,
and you can't take
a hint. I hope that's a good thing. And so we had a caller call in yesterday morning, and he says, I'd like to know about a move and a job. And she immediately goes, I remember you, and here's what I told you last time, and here's what I'm telling you again. And I was just floored because it's like, I don't know, that was like 4 months ago. How do you remember that, Sue? But she was spot on. So Sue is our guest yesterday morning. Again, today we've got Erica Irvin, and at 7 o'clock we'll be welcoming Ronnie Kerr to the show. He's got so much that's going on. We can't wait to talk to him for the first time. Tomorrow on the Friday Night Dance Party, the show's live at 2 o'clock. We have Madeline Victoria. She is a recent Academia Music Award winner, and our show starts at 2 p.m. Pacific time, and that's hour number one. We're welcoming Madeline. Hour number two, of course, is your request, so get those requests sent in or Facebook them to me, and I'll play them as we can along the show. And then Friday morning, our last show of the week, it's Super Gay Radio with Paul in Mass, and that starts at 8 a.m. We're going to have two guests Saturday morning. First guest is Frank Carselli. He also has a drag persona of Miss Viola. He's going to be giving us one of his final RuPaul reviews as the series is coming to a close this season. And in the second half of the show, Aunt Barbara, America's number one trans she's also transgender, which is interesting in itself. But number one Tupperware dealer in the country, and I think it's for like 15 or 17 years in a row, and by like substantial amounts. It's not like she just beat out, you know, Mabel from around the corner. She sells hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of Tupperware every year, and Aunt Barbara's going to talk to us about staying fresh and keeping things in order for the springtime. But
oh,
now,
that's cool.
It's very cool. Okay.
Well, of course, you may be done at that time on Saturday. I have, however, am not, because I have out in Santa Cruz Saturday evening.
Yeah, what's the place to be on Saturday?
It is, and my guest is going to be Dr. Dennis C. Miller, not the comedian, the doctor, and we are going to talk about the stigma of depression and how to get happy. And I'm begging a certain someone to come on and co-host with me because I'll be alone and I really want him to co-host with me, who will remain nameless, Garrett Miller. But anyway,
I got a plate full on Saturday, so we'll see. I will do my best to try to make that happen. I am not making any promises though. So
I know.
But without further ado, this is our first time to welcome Erica Irvin to the show, and hopefully it will be one of many times that we can get her to come back to Rated LGBT Radio. But Erica, thank you for coming on tonight. I know it's kind of short notice, but we had a lot that we wanted to talk with you about, and you're generous to take time out of your schedule today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Garrett. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're great. Thank you so much. It's such a thrill to talk to you.
I really appreciate the praise, guys. I have been just stupid busy lately. I've been made co-executive producer on a film, and that has kept me up all night for the last week. So I've been quite happy. It's a good time right now. I'm not someone that lays in the victim world. I really just take full charge of my career and I jump onto things. But I'm actually doing some reach outs right now because there's a problem going on. And 17 states have been just beating the heck out of LGBT people, the red states, and specifically the T states, the T and that LGBT. And it has to do with the bathroom bill. And I'm really struggling with their reason behind it. And we're fighting back. And this is a national movement to really literally punish the hell out of North Carolina. It stands to lose about $5 billion in educational funding if they keep up their bigoted platform under House Bill number 2.
Right. And one of the things, and the governor, again, is being fastidious in his denial, which drives me crazy because he's trying to play up how he's the victim, which is just ridiculous. But the one aspect about this particular strategy on the anti-LGBT side is that they've taken an issue which is ridiculous. First of all, there have been no, in all the geographies where protections have been laid down for transgender people to use the restroom that they feel most identified with and comfortable with, there has not been a single, not one incident of molestation or intrusion or any of those things. That has not happened. It is a complete and total fantasy. But
the
they've taken that and they have plugged in to this stranger danger fear, not of transgender people really, but of straight men, that they are just assumed predators that are going to descend upon little girls in restrooms because they've now been given this opportunity. And it is a fear and irrationality built on bigotry. I mean, it is just a holy mess all come together.
Yeah, it's xenophobia and myopic thinking. If they really look at transgender people as a whole, there's not just women, there are men. If you take a look at this law, you're going to force fully grown bearded guys, we're talking muscle men, in the women's restroom. Trans men. People don't think that this was a really short-sighted thing, really, to punish us. Let's take a look at the laws, just in general. There are already laws on the book that punish sexual assault, molestation, voyeurism, any sexual misconduct. What is this bill really saying? Isn't it just about water fountains? Not just about the bathroom. I mean, come on, guys. This is designed to exclude a specific group.
This is exactly what it's doing.
People they politically disagree with. And they're using children. They're using children they're really using children to justify their bigotry and their hatred.
Right.
And I want them to stop doing that.
The thing I want to ask you about that, though, is the flip side of this and why these protections are important. They have done studies, and I'd like your kind of personal feelings around this. They have done studies that have shown that this kind of discrimination and fear and apprehension on the part of transgender people have actually increased transgender suicides and depression and those issues. Do you relate to that? Do you know people that you say, yes, I'm seeing that in people?
I'm looking at an article right now, and it's really subtle abuse that we feel. There's really six areas that are danger zones for transgender people, generally speaking. One, family support. Does your family support you, or do they reject you? Do they abandon you? Physical violence, discrimination, that's 2 and 3. Do you pass as your target gender? And passing is riddled with all kinds of political issues. Internalized transphobia. and intersectional identities, disability and race, all play a part in the elements that increase our suicidation. And in these states, specifically five of them, North Carolina specifically, you guys know about the Trevor Project?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, the Trevor Project, do we have their number? We can probably put that on the show. I could actually look it up real quick. The Trevor Project just reduced
I'll get it.
In North Carolina, as of the passing of HB2, the calls to the Trevor Project for people who are struggling with suicidation doubled.
Yes.
Literally doubled.
That's the issue.
Same thing with Mississippi, same thing with South Carolina, same thing with Tennessee. These are the red states. Texas, Kentucky, Mississippi is competing with North Carolina. I mean, look at Pat McElroy. He's just getting the economic butt-reaming of a lifetime. And that state stands to be impacted by losing $4.7 billion in lost educational funding, $65 million in lost federal funding contracts, $108 million in lost federal funding for NC Works and training, $5.6 million lost in grants under the Violation Against Women's Act. I mean, globally, this is not to mention PayPal. On the East Coast, Charlotte is the Silicon Valley, like our Silicon Valley up here in Santa Clara. It's like their Silicon Valley on the East Coast. A lot of high tech is starting to move out. You've seen Bruce Springsteen move out of there. I think the baseball All-Stars game is moving out of there. They're going to be economically defenestrated back to the Stone Ages if they keep up this bigoted platform. And I swear, ego and bigotry go hand in hand. It's just they're really holding on to the gun. And
Erica,
they're going to lose.
Erica, can I ask a question here? Why do you think, you know, because this goes back to, like, you know, if we go back 15, 20 years to, like, when states were reluctant to have, like, an MLK day. And I look at Arizona as an example where I came from. I was moving there the same year that was all a flutter. And the only reason they finally, at least the spin on it was, the only reason they finally said, well, I guess we can go ahead and have that, you know, darned MLK day, is because the Super Bowl and all of the big money concerts and all of that were saying, well, we're not going to play your state. We're not going to bring the money to your state. And it was only through really an economic boycott that anything really ended up happening. But then you see that time and again for marriage equality in the last couple of years. We're not going to go here if you're not going to do this. Why do you think it's now, you know, it's, you know, the transgender, you know, bathroom bills and things like this that are really, you know, making the noise? Why does it have to get to that point for people to say, well, I guess it's okay for you to have civil rights?
Well, if you believe in equality for some and not others, you don't believe in equality at all.
Right.
We're really talking about something called horizontal equity. And going back in time, there's a meme in our community. We were invisible. There was a meme, you know, passing is life, like not passing is death. There's a survival imperative to assimilate. If you don't assimilate, you didn't survive. And that's a really harsh reality for transgender people. And there's been an emergence of us in media. Laverne Cox, Janet Mock, Caitlyn Jenner, so many celebrities like these, including myself, have really come to the forefront and shown them. I mean, Caitlyn Jenner really broke the ice on that. Caitlyn Jenner, I'm going to dead name him for a second, Bruce Jenner, this person on the Wheaties box. That's a household name. This goes back to the 70s. Olympic decathlon gold medal winner, Presidential Council on Fitness. We created, quote unquote, Superman out of this person and a household name branded like that. Well, guess what? The man is gone. The super is still there. And this is what's really brought us to the forefront, and it's about fear. We got to stop saying transgender people. My God, we're talking backwooded, reactionary thinking. And as you said before, there have been no cases of sexual assault, sexual violence voyeurism by transgender people in any bathroom anywhere in this country. And it's a lark. It's a canard. It's just perpetuating negative stereotypes. And again, it's part of that Christo-fascist gender binary prejudice. And they left us alone as long as we assimilated, as long as we could woodwork ourselves. And it's just like when you go out for parts in movies. You know, they don't cast me as a transgender person because I look too much like a woman.
I wanted to ask you about that because you part of your career was assimilated where, you know, you were known as the world's tallest model and, you know, everybody was like, wow, what incredible woman you are. And, you know, and then you chose to come out as transgender. What was that like? And what is the difference of how you were treated before and how you've been treated after?
Well, I had a better dating life. Put it that way. It's been tough. It's been a rough 2015 as it's coming out. And there was a coming out. I came out really in 2007. I put an article out there, but I really covered that up by creating Amazon Eve, a character that eventually got on American Horror Story Freak Show. And I fought for transgender people to have health insurance, and I eventually came to fruition in 2008, lobbying efforts on the Affordable Care Act, and which culminated with multiple parties fighting for this. I'm not the only one. To remove the exclusion out of health insurance contracts in all parts of this country, in every single state, led to Affordable Care Act Section 1557. Now, again, I worked on the employee benefits side, and you know, I've been an actor for many, many, many years, and I left and went to law school. And this whole process of working in business and legal affairs and working in the insurance industry and the contracts, it has helped me a lot. You know, I saw a place where I could actually contribute. Now, once I was done with that, I wanted to disappear and have a life. Well, guess what? I think it was Harvey Milk, you got to come out. How are you going to hide a 6'8" woman? Well, I hit her in plain sight. I knew I wasn't going to remain stealth for long. So you got to come out and give them nowhere else to go. Really, come out before they out you. And you couldn't ask for a better vehicle like the American Horror Story Freak Show, where not only do I take my little modeling name, Amazon Eve, and I put it on a trailer and I have a lot of fun with it, I come out with a bang. And all of the work that I've done has led to this beautiful moment. But then it's part of that visibility. Oh, my God, we got to do something about this. These states that are passing all these anti-transgender laws, really they're targeting us. They're trying to morally mandate us out of existence because they're trying to enforce this gender binary prejudice, this black and white thinking. And it's really myopic thinking, guys. I don't think I answered your question. What was your specific question?
No, you did. You actually did, and you answered more because that is one of the horrors of what is happening. Is it's not even like they're like they did with gay marriage, where they came out and it's like, oh, it's wrong and it's immoral and all that. They're just trying to ignore your existence altogether. I mean, it's like, well, you know, we're not even worried about that small part of the population if it even exists, and you know, bye bye. You know, and it is such a crucial, life-saving thing to support the dignity of everyone, and everyone who, you know, to me, in my own opinion, and all the people I know who are transgender, every single one of them is my hero, because it's like somebody who goes through that and is public about it is talking about something that's very human, which is transgendering or transitioning into who we each feel we are internally and externalizing it and being that person authentically. And, you know, a lot of us don't do it because we don't have the issue, but we do have somebody inside of us that we're not allowing ourselves to be.
Yeah, it's so psychosexually damaging to not affirm our identity, especially this condition shows itself up very early in, you know, like 4, 5, or 6. And when I was starting to feel this way, the whole world tried to brainwash me to behave like a boy, to play boy things, to play with boy games and sports and be rough and tumbly. And I didn't want to. I wanted to play with dolls. And most of my girlfriends were always, you know, I had girlfriends before I was 8. And right around 8 or 9, that's when boys and girls like really start being enforced and separated. And this is the 70s. And about the 80s, was my time to run away. And I came to the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, looking for help. Our healthcare was shut down. And when I found out that, you know, feminism has some explaining to do, because in the 70s, the feminist leadership got together and they put us to a vote. They actually voted us, you know, our transsexual women, and they said no. And this culminated in a contiguous thought process, a narrative that led to Janice Raymond writing a book called The Transsexual Empire. And literally in her book, it said, it would be best to morally mandate them out of existence. She eventually wrote a report to the NCTCHE, which is a healthcare committee that advises Medicare on what is coverable in terms of medical maladies of mind and body. And we were decertified, and our healthcare got shut down, and 50,000 of us died. And that's a rough estimate of visible transgender people in the United States. And we've had an upturn in the 90s. But, again, we've experienced a genocide, and now we're fighting back. Now we're really pushing, and this is that final push. And if you look at history, if you look at post-Reformation, post-Brown versus Board of Education, these events, you know, Brown versus Board of Education, before it was separate and not equal, and then that was voted down by the U.S. Supreme Court, now we had to integrate. And that was when the KKK and white supremacy really fought back with violent terrorism against people of color. The hardest part about this, I know it's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, in these states, we actually could get married. In these states that are red states, we could change our birth certificates, get married. Now we have less rights. Keep in mind, because there's a more visible element of us. Some of us can't pass. Some of us want to be genderqueer. You have to understand that there's really two groups of transgender people. It's an iceberg effect. It's like 1/7 versus 6/7 of us hidden because of that survival imperative to assimilate. There's those who are assimilationists and those who are genderqueer. And each one of them by a valid identity or valid by themselves. And a lot of times they shame each other, okay, because of the intersectional privilege, one who passes versus one who doesn't. Because if you pass, you have all kinds of privileges. You're blacklisted. You're much more likely to get work if you assimilate well. And you can get the love you want, frankly. And it's created this paradigm where we're at risk. And right now, in this last, I'd say, 5 years before we get an ENDA passed, a gender-inclusive ENDA, because you have to understand, right? Even there have been lesbians, because they're so butch, have been thrown out of bathrooms in these states. This is where the gender identity comes into play. That fluidity of gender expression comes into play. And this is the final battleground, and it happens to be the bathroom. Unbelievable.
Right. Well, for gay marriage, it was the wedding cake. So, yeah, it's weird where these things play out. So, Erica, based on what you're saying, do we need this battle? I mean, is this battle a requirement for us to publicly go out and say, no, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore, and fight publicly rather than sort of just subtly evolving it quietly behind the scenes?
When's the last time you've been deprived?
When's the last time I've been deprived?
Yeah.
Recently.
Okay. You know, pride is not about celebrating being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, queer, ass-kicking Amazon. It's about living our life free from oppression is oppression.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Our purpose at Pride is we need to eliminate those barriers. Sure. You know, we can't get everyone to not hate us. Our goal is to manifest our efforts legislatively so they cannot manifest that hate legislatively. That's really where it is. And it comes down to splitting hairs. In a lot of ways in gay marriage, it was, the argument was they're going to harm straight marriage. They're going to harm the family. These are bogus arguments, really, just antiquated arguments. And it's about rescuing people. It's an asymmetrical warfare. You know, you have to understand we aren't at war, though. There are no front lines, no battlefield, no one to aim a weapon at. This is a rescue mission. We have to rescue people from their ignorance. They have to get to know us.
Well, so, there's also a front there that it is important in that you mentioned it in the history of what most transgender people experience, which is knowing this at a young age. And now we have parents that are coming out and saying, hey, my four-year-old is, I am allowing to live a transgender life because that's who they are obviously are, and we are supporting that. And what they found is kids that are raised that way are avoiding the depression, suicide attempts, et cetera, that a lot of adult transgender people have been really forced to go through themselves. And so this, there's a level of acceptance that is life-saving and a requirement, you know, in our society. I mean, it is, we literally are saving children by embracing
them. We absolutely are. We absolutely are. I just, from an insurance standpoint, from a risk management point of view, it costs less to treat this condition than not to. And really, moms and dads have to please love your LGBT kids no matter what, especially the little T's. Okay? You got to ask yourself, and I'm just talking about trans girls, you want a dead son or a living daughter? That's something you got to do the math on. A parent that doesn't support their child's transition, the worst thing they can go through is the wrong puberty. That's where they're most at risk. Have a 50-50 chance of dying. Now roll the dice. Flip your coin. Okay? Really ask yourself, you want a dead son or a living daughter? Correlated, and that's correlated to the trans men, you know, when a dead daughter, living son. There also is equally, and I have to have symptoms of equal suicidation.
Right.
And again, if they are supported, they thrive.
That's the most astounding thing. It can be so easy. It really can be so easy to flip the switch on this.
Absolutely. The proof of concept is there. It's already there.
I hate to change gears here, but our time is going to be wrapping up in just a couple of moments, and Ronnie's going to call in, and we're going to talk to him next. So number one, Erica, we need to have you back because I think your voice is too important to a lot of folks, and we need to hear more from you. So I'm going to ask that you come back on whenever you want. So the door is open to you.
I welcome the opportunity.
Okay, well, so there you go. You have an open door. We're going to have you back. But Saturday, you're doing something kind of wild and crazy with my dear friend, Sheena Metal. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. We are performing the Vagina Monologues at the Atwater Village Theater in Atwater Village at 3269 Casitas Avenue in Los Angeles. That's 3269 Casitas Avenue. I'm going to be posting this on my Twitter and my Facebook, but I'm going to tell you more about it. I'm so fortunate that I was invited amongst other celebrity women to promote V-Day, which is raising awareness for violence against women. How do I frame that question? There's a lot of violence against women. V-Day is about raising awareness of the violence against women around the world, and events are this gorgeous play, and I have a fun monologue. I can't wait to perform it. you have to come and see it. Come and watch me and my vagina perform.
And for everybody listening to the show right now, we have a couple of things. I've got a Facebook link to Erica's Facebook fan page. I've got a link to the Vagina Monologues where you can get all of the information, including ordering your tickets online. And we have a link for V-Day. So if you'd like to find out about raising awareness to support the V-Day cause, you can certainly do that as well. And it's all linked directly to their website. So that will be cool. So what should people know specifically about your performance on Saturday night here, Erica?
I'm still tall. I'm not shrinking. I'm going to be wearing a whole bunch of pink.
Okay.
It's a big pink day. Come, you're going to enjoy the show. It's women empowerment. And I get to do one of the funnier, more in-demand monologues that I'm just so excited about. I put that request in and begged Sheena, please let me do this particular monologue. But you have to come see it. It's a surprise. Okay. I will be in a feature film coming up here pretty soon called Chimera. I'm going to be seeing a screening of it this month, and I'm also very excited about that. I'm dying to watch it right now. I haven't really seen it. I've seen pieces of it in ADR and post, but I'm just so excited about the work I'm doing, and several other projects that are coming down the line that are currently in pre-production that I've been invited to act in. So I'm having a lovely career. I'm very blessed. I'm blessed with a lot of abundance.
You're quickly becoming the busiest woman in show business, and I love that.
Yes.
You are always up to something that's really, really cool. Erica, we got to go, so I hate to eat and run, but it's time to wish you well for the evening. Go catch Erica this Saturday night at Vagina Monologues. Again, the link's on the show page. You can go buy your tickets and help support V-Day. All proceeds for Saturday's performance go to support that cause. Erica, you're fantastic. Thank you for being a friend of the show. Have a great night.
Come back. We can't wait to talk to you more. I've got a whole dozen other questions we didn't even get to. I'm dying.
We only have 30 minutes, guys. We can do this again. We can just really hit it up.
There we go.
Garrett,
thanks,
and Rob,
Erica.
Thank you guys for having so much on. All right.
Bless your heart. Have a great night. Thanks again. We're going to take a real quick break and hear from our friends at Rainbow Brew, and we're going to be back with Mr. Ronnie Kerr to find out all of the exciting things that are happening for him in the land of Hollywood.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
And we are back. And by the way, if you do get a chance to order any coffee from Rainbow Brew, just tell them you heard them here on Rated G Radio or Rated LGBT Radio or Super Gay Radio, any of the three brand names you'd like to talk about. They will actually do a happy dance in their shop in Minneapolis, St. Paul before grinding your beans, euphemistically or otherwise, and sending you that coffee same day. So go and order Rainbow Brew coffee. They will love you for it. We're welcoming back to the show. My co-host is Mr. Rob Watson, host of the very popular Saturday night show out in Santa Cruz. He's going to be talking about that at the half hour mark. We'll have a half an hour left to gab about all kinds of other stuff. But in the meantime, this is our first time to welcome, and certainly not the last, Mr. Ronnie Kerr from the land of Hollywood. And you'll remember him from the popular series Boys Town. And he's going to talk to us about all the cool things that are going on in his world. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Great to have you on, Ronnie.
Thank you. The first thing is my episodes of Boys Town haven't actually started airing yet. I'm in season 2, and I think that starts airing sometime this summer. So,
well,
I don't know the exact date, but I know it's on
a time-traveling machine or something like that.
Yeah. Well, then let me know how it is, because I haven't even seen him yet.
It's
so
really great.
Oh, good. Thanks. I was worried about that. Yeah.
Fantastic performance. So, Ronnie, I have to tell you.
Thank you.
You know, I think that we've been friends on Facebook for like 100 years, and I think I kind of ran into you almost kind of sort of at Charlie Vaughn's power way out the door, just getting there. And I'm sure I've seen you at like Child of the 70s or something like that. So it's like one of those, you know, 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon. And I'm so excited that you're here tonight to talk about you, because I've been going, we need to find out what's going on with this young man. So
I know you and I actually have a lot of mutual friends, and
you think we'd be hanging
of,
out every Friday night or something.
You would think. Well, and now it's going to change. Now we'll be hanging out all the time.
All the time. You're going to be like, God,
yeah,
there we go.
I was at Charlie Vaughn's birthday. I made a very brief appearance. I think I spent more time in traffic there and back than I spent at the party.
Yeah, traffic will do that to you. But, you know, all the people who are listening from around the country tonight, if you've never been to Southern California and driven anytime, anywhere, this just makes absolutely no sense. But, you know, if you want to go 40 miles or 50 miles, it's really like a 2-hour one-way thing. And you said, well, how can that be? It just is. It's just a fact of life. So, you know, traffic is kind of terrible.
You're being generous, thinking you're going to get 40 miles in 2 hours. That's a very generous estimate.
I've gotten 40 miles in L.A. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, but, I hit that mileage. So.
Yeah, well, maybe at that time,
yeah,
for sure.
So, Ronnie, you're also doing Where the Bears Are. That your episodes haven't shown on that one yet either, though, right?
No, we just started filming. They're on day 4 today, and it's season 5. So I will be you will see me quite a bit in season 5. And then I don't know I can't really say too much about it, but they did post one photo on their page, sort of letting people know that Chaz Bona was also part of this season. So I am allowed to say that. But that's really all I'm allowed to say on it. They try and keep it very hush-hush with sort of what the guest stars are doing and who they are. And but I am, you will see me throughout the whole season, and that starts airing in September.
Very cool. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of themes that go through the parts that you play seem to be romantic, relationship, partnering kind of oriented parts. Is that a fair generalization?
Pre-2006, that was completely accurate. And then I don't know what happened this year. So in Boys Town, it's no secret. I definitely do not play a good guy. I am the most miserable person that you would encounter on that show. The character's name is Dex, and he's just he's so much fun to play, but he's really just a terrible human being. And then I left that and I went to a TV series called Speaking for the Dead, which is in its first season. And I played an officer named Trooper Smith, who was also probably not the nicest person around. I will just say for some of the other projects, which we can't talk about, that theme has definitely continued this year. So it's definitely been a lot of fun. But when I do Please Don't Eat the Pansies, which we're shooting in July, I go back to being a nice guy. So, and then it is very much all about the romance and romantic comedy and sort of every little boy's fantasy, how they want their life to turn out.
So now, which is more fun to play? The romantic guy that gets to kiss the handsome men, or the bad guy?
For me right now, it's the bad guy, because I've never gotten to play it in 20 years. It's always been like, it started with a film called Regarding Billy, and it was just a lot of crying, and it's a film that I still probably get the most amount of fan mail from. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's really this sweet little film, and that sort of changed the entire trajectory of what I sort of went out for and what I did. And then every sort of film after that, it was, you know, for many, many years, playing this very wholesome, boy next door that, I think, you know, in your fantasies, you're like, oh, if I could meet somebody, it would be like that character. So I've been very fortunate that way. But it's definitely more fun to play the bad guy. You have a lot more creative liberties, and, it's a good time.
So what are the pictures that I've been seeing this week that where you've let your hair, your body hair grow out? You've got this goatee, you've got all kinds of, or, you know, like facial hair going on. What's going on with that role?
Well, that's for Where the Bears Are. So I have a full beard right now, and this is, I'm 42. So this is the first time I've ever had facial hair in my life. And it's very itchy. That's how I feel about it. And I have to, I'm filming through the 18th of the month, so I'll have this for a couple more weeks. But it's been well received. I've definitely gotten some very positive attention from it. And it's fun to get to change up your look and have a reason to. And I don't know. I mean, everybody knows when you let facial hair grow in, it's definitely not a fun experience, but it's worth it for sure. And the guys on that show it's really a very, very fun set and a really good time. But so that's what all that's about. And it wasn't until I started filming that we were really allowed to say anything. So I would just like post, you know, a very attention-seeking photo and just not be able to really talk about it.
So you can't even talk about what your character is on Where the Bears Are at all? Or?
All I can say is his name is Chase, and that's it. Yeah. I will let them make any announcement they want to, but I would, you know, since we've just started filming, there's not really a lot I can say about that one.
Well, without getting into the plots of the shows, is there a characteristic difference between the gay communities that are presented on Where the Bears Are versus the gay community in Boys Town?
I think at the end of it, you know, people are people, but the tone of the show is very different. So Where the Bears Are, it's really a comedy and it's high camp. And there are a lot of, it's written so well. The guy who, there's two guys that write it, but one of them, his name is Rick Kopp, and he was one of the writers of the Golden Girls. So it's really clever, punchy dialogue. And Boys Town is completely different. It's a very serious show, and it's more like TV drama, and there's a lot of drama that goes on with those characters, and it's all very heavy. So the style of the shows couldn't be completely different. One's, you know, very, very serious, and, you know, their lives are very affected by all these things that are going on, and Where the Bears Are, it's pure comedy, and you're meant to just watch it and laugh. And I think they're both really successful with how they present themselves, but couldn't be further from sort of each other and how they're made.
you couldn't step out of the door of one and suddenly you're in the other. It's like different planet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just completely different for sure.
Yeah.
So Ronnie, okay. Before Rob, I have a question for Ronnie. I'm going to ask one. I'm going to sneak this
go
in
for
here.
It.
So what? Okay. So out of all these things that you do, what do you look for when your agent calls and says, "Ronnie, I've got another seven-figure contract here. What do you want to do with it on this one?" So what do you look for when you're out shopping around for gigs?
It's, you know, obviously you got to make a living. So there are some gigs you think, that's not so great, but I'm going to take it because it's a paycheck and you have to go to work. And, you know, this business is really tough. So it's just a matter of, is this something that, you know, you think you can do justice for? And, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a business. So, you know, there are sometimes you want to really do this one project, but there's no money and you can't, you have to go with the one that pays.
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
Is it going to be something that's really going to help your career? Because it's so funny, the amount of the discrepancy of wealth in Hollywood.
It's
I
huge.
Did a, it's people really do not realize it. I did a pilot for ABC back in 2012 and it starred Margot Mattingale, Doris Roberts, Terry Kennedy, Ken Howard, Louise Guzman, Delta Burke, myself, and this young lady named Briga Helton. And Briga and I were really the only ones that had, I mean, all of these other people have these amazing careers. And unfortunately, Delta got very hurt during the shooting of the pilot and the show was scrapped. But I made more from that pilot in a week and a half than I probably made collectively in 2 years to any other 2 years of my career.
Ooh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You get paid significantly more to do a pilot than you do guest starring or episodic. And the rules in the business are changing. You know, it used to be that you would get booked on a network show and you would get a guest star role. And now they'll pay you for like 3 day players or a week. It's just, yeah. And then you go on a show like, you know, Where the Bears Are, that's fully funded from fans, and they don't have that kind of money to put out. You know, you're getting paid a very modest wage, but you're just still super excited to be there and working. And so I look for those two things. Like, can I put food on my table. And, you know, there comes a point in your career where you, you know, there is a responsibility. You build up this fan base and they support you and they're, you know, they really get very invested in what you do and what's going on in your world, that there is that you are always thinking, will I receive backlash from this? If I do this project, like, are people going to go bonkers? And you do think about that. That's, it's a very real part of the job, because as much fan mail as you get, you do sometimes get some not nice letters when somebody doesn't appreciate what you've done.
Well, I mean, who do you play to? I don't mean this flip, but, you know, do you play to the one letter out of 100, or do you play to the other, you know, 99?
I just try and play to what I think is the best overall. I mean, you can't please everybody all the time. It's just, no matter what career you're in or what you're trying to do, not everybody's gonna appreciate it. But you just have to, you know, it's a business like anything else, and you have to treat it like a business. Like, is this smart career wise? Because you could make a couple wrong turns and really set yourself back and really sabotage your career. So you just have to, you know, you trust your agent, you trust your manager and the couple other sort of confidants you have in the business. And you really think, like, is this going to help or hurt, or do neither? And, you know, are you just going to get to go and have a good time?
So what do you do, Ronnie, to kind of keep that everything sharp? I mean, do you do any type of, and since you use the equation of treating it like a job, because it really is, it's your career. What do you do for continuing education, training, and to, you know, learn new things? What's been something really valuable you've learned in the last year or two?
I take a great class with a guy named Dean Franck, and he's part of Pembroke Franck Casting. And if you research them online, they cast just, you know, dozens upon dozens upon dozens of movies a year. And so I do a weekly class with Dean, and it's probably the toughest class I've ever been in, because you'll get your scene on a Monday and you have to sort of do it for him on a Friday. But it's just these massive 5-6 page scenes that are almost like 5 or 6 page monologues. And the expectation is you're off book and you're treating it like you're going in for a job. And it's really difficult. And, you know, years ago, the guy who is my producing partner now for Please Don't Eat the Pandies, I met him by taking his class, who is Craig Campobasso, who I know has been on
your
show. Yeah. Craig does rock. He does, yeah. So I met him in class, and he got me my first big agent, actually. So I owe much of my career to Craig. I had taken his class, and, you know, he thought I had done well, and he made a recommendation to a much larger agency than I should have ever been getting at that point. And they signed me, and I was very, very fortunate. Yeah.
So if you're listening, Craig, I'm almost done with I Am Theron. So I'm reading his book right now. If you haven't read Craig Campobasso's, the autobiography of it's dark where I'm doing this, of an extraterrestrial saga, I Am Theron is out in paperback now. You should go and buy a copy. So there's your little plug for the night. There we go. Sorry about that.
I have it in hardback.
Oh my God.
I know.
I can't compete. I don't have it in any back at all. So
yeah, it's good. You should read it. And then I watched his film, Stranger at the Pentagon. So
yes.
I don't know if you guys have seen that.
So what
but
do you
that's
think
been,
about that?
You know, I'm afraid to answer this because the people who believe, they believe so strongly, and I'm not sure where on that scale I fall. So can I plead the fifth?
Plead the fifth.
I'll just say I'm undecided.
What is it in that film that you're believing in or not believing in?
Well, the film talks about this this alien spaceship that landed, and then the pilot of the ship had a meeting with the president to talk about certain things. And, you know, it's, you have to just, you know, you have to watch it and decide for yourself, like, do you believe that happened? Do you, is it fact or fiction? And I'll say, I thought it was very entertaining and I really enjoyed the film. I'm just not sure where I fall on that yet. Undecided.
Well, they did just find three recent
or three planets that are quote unquote not that far away, comparatively speaking, and you know, we're talking about in the neighborhood of the universe around a red dwarf star that could be life sustaining. So
now I'll say I believe in extraterrestrials for sure. I'm 100% believer in that. I don't think we're alone out there. I just don't know that I can really, I'm not sure that I'm really sold that they look exactly like us and would be able to sort of walk among us and have these meetings. I'm definitely more along the lines of like believing they, I think some people call them like the gray men when they sort of look like that. I think that's what they, I would tend to be more apt to buy into that they look different like that than like you or I.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, I wanted to ask you about your other talents. You have written and starred in two films, at least, that I know of, Shut Up and Kiss Me and Saltwater. What was that like about writing your own film?
Well, you know, very invasive. You know, they always say write what you know, so I much of the stuff that are in both of those films are actually true accounts. And the names have been changed, but most of those people are actual people that were in my real life and real experiences. And, you know, Shut Up and Kiss Me, I didn't give it the Hollywood ending. Now, I didn't, the real ending was I did not stay with that guy. Who in real life, his name is Mike. But I didn't stay with them because that, you know, for me, I'm a firm believer in monogamy and everything that goes along with it. But I sort of really wanted to write what I think happens more often, what I see than maybe my own personal experience. And people, I think, really liked the movie and hated the ending. They hated that my character stayed with the other character in the end and sort of accepted him for who he was. And I think that's probably what I get the most unkind emails about. I love the film, but you had to compromise yourself and you're a terrible, you know, figure for the community. And I'm like, well, that, you know, it didn't really happen, but
it's a movie.
And I know, yeah, you can't, like I said, you can't please everyone, right? But it was a choice I made, and I stand by it today. And I think those same people were the ones that were complaining that then, you know, my character wound up with the other character in Saltwater. So, but, they, you know, they were also very different movies. Saltwater was directed by Charlie Vaughn. And that's how Charlie and I really became acquainted. And it's just a very sweet romantic comedy that just deals with some heavier topics. And Shut Up and Kiss Me was, you know, very sort of camp and comedy. And it was supposed to be very light and entertaining. And now that I've written Please Don't Eat the Pansies, this is like the first one that really doesn't have anything to do with my life. And so I wrote the script and I wanted it to be so far from my life because I decided I was done giving that part of myself. And then I was searching around for a writing partner to sort of help me and make sure I steered clear of writing the same movie again. And then I partnered up with Craig and we continued to flesh it out until we have something that we're really excited about and excited to make. And I listened when Craig was on your show, and neither of you guys talked about that. Garrett, you're actually writing a song for it. Are you
not?
Well,
you know, I don't want to, it's, you know.
Yeah. And I'm so excited. I can't even tell you. If you get me started on that, I won't shut up. So.
Yeah. Actually, at that time, I think we weren't allowed to say that because I usually bring up all sorts of things that Garrett doesn't want me to.
Oh yeah, you know
the fact
that
he's got the number
know,
one hip hop song in the country and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah,
that's true.
One of my songs on Blonde Jesus was number one on the hip hop charts for 4 weeks, and it just was number one like last week, and then Gay Wedding went back up to number one on another chart. It's number one on another one. So I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, you gotta just hire somebody to put that out there for you, so you don't have to say it. You can just have other people.
I know.
Say it,
well,
yes.
If you know of somebody good that works cheap, I mean, because we're talking like the Michelob Ultra. Not even 64
calories. I'll introduce you to my publicist.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll
okay.
introduce you to my publicist. He's very good. You'll
okay.
and affordable. So that's a very rare
good
combo.
But if we're going to talk about Please Don't Eat the Pansies for just a second, I am so excited about this song that that I'm working on right now. I'm working on it with Mr. Bob Esty, who did all of the big Cher, Barbara Streisand, Donna Summer disco albums of the 70s and 80s. And without actually trying to break into a very poor non-studio rendition of the song, which I won't do to you, I will tell you, it is going to kick ass. So, yeah.
I believe excited. That. Yeah, I know Craig's really excited too. So, music-wise, between that and then...
you got
Debbie
Gibson.
Yeah, giving a bunch of music, which is... I'm a huge fan of Debbie Gibson, so I make no bones about that. I'm Electric Youth, but
God, that's the best ever.
Yeah, and Lost in Your Eyes. I've spent many a day in my basement singing that one. So
yeah,
but
who in the film? Because you've got major names that are going to be in this project. Every time that Craig posts a casting thing, I'm like, no, I can't believe they got this person.
I know. I went from being thinking like I'm the big star in the film, and now I'm like, wait. down. So Jack A. Harry is in the film, which most people know from 227 or Sister
mm-hmm.
Sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually on Sister Sister back in the day.
No.
So, I was, yeah. There were two white kids in college. One was me in music class, and the other was actually Brittany Murphy.
Oh, wow.
Which most people don't
wow.
realize. But yeah, Brittany Murphy was on Sister Sister for a long time. Mary Wilson from The Supremes is in it. Recently, Paul Fox has just signed on, and he was
wow.
in Elizabeth and Red Tails, How to Make Love Like an Englishman. He's fantastic. I'm really excited that he's in it. Chip Coffey is in it, that most people know from, if you've ever watched any psychic medium show.
Yeah, he's huge.
He's so sweet. I think Chip is probably one of the most sweet, genuine people I have ever really come across. So if you ever get the chance to have a conversation with him, he's just so lovely. Ian Roberts, who I've worked with before, is in it. Andy Lauer and Eric Lutz, who most people know from Caroline in the City, is in it.
Yeah.
Michael Vaccaro, Chuck Sekula, whom I love. I see Chuck at the gym all the time.
I think he lives
Harry
in the
Ray.
Gym. You live in the gym, though, too.
Yeah, Chuck and I are gym buddies. all those guys from Child in the 70s are in it. I'm blanking on names. I feel like this is what it would be like if you gave an Oscar speech, and then you're like, who did I not forget and to bring in?
And you are so going to hear about this tomorrow at the Keurig machine.
I know. I really feel like I am. I'm like,
yeah, we don't provide the ticker tape like the Academy Awards does anymore.
it's just, it's
but
just
I mean, it's star
really
studded. You got
to, Berna Roberts,
yeah.
who I've done. Berna Roberts was in Boys Town with me. She was in Saltwater. She was in Shut Up and Kiss Me. I mean, she and I have worked together on so, so many things that I couldn't even begin to tell you. Oh, Angela Relucchio, who's a series regular on Code Black, Kyle Carvin. I don't remember. There's a lot of people. I know if you're listening and I forgot your name.
It's a big cast, though. And just for anybody who has not heard of the movie yet, because again, it's still in pre-production. What is Please Don't Eat the Pansies about? If you can give us a little bit of a hint here, Ronnie.
Oh, and Pandora Box is in it. Oh yeah, Pandora Box. That's one of the ones I forgot. It's a really Mark Cirillo, Rosalind Kind, Barbara Streisand's sister is in it. There's a lot of singers, I guess. Ann Walker is in it. God, I keep forgetting these people. Tom Goss, Vince Pavia, who you probably don't know, but you will, because this dude he's amazing. It's a really very much an ensemble piece about four different couples, and there are four guys, and they're really good friends, but they each sort of couple sort of deals with something different that's very relatable, from starting a romance to being married a long time to wanting to get married to, you know, you found somebody you're crazy about, but one of your best friends doesn't like them for whatever their hang up is. And it just sort of follows their story. And one couple is dealing with, you know, what do you, it's just situations we don't see tackled a lot in film. One couple is dealing with, you know, a parent who's aging and starting to have Alzheimer's. And, you know, when do we tell that story? Like, how are we prepared to sort of deal with our parents and what are we going to do with them? And then it follows one other set of a bit older guys, and sort of that, you know, the whole thing is really, when we watch so many independent gay-themed films, we don't really tell those stories at what happens after 35 and 40. Like, it's just, we sort of make the assumption that that's it. They just are put out to pasture. And, but
you
our dramas and yeah, I know. Hey, I'm 42. I'm right there. But I don't see myself represented very well,
yeah,
in that medium. And so I really want to see what happens to those characters and it not be, you know, yeah, sure, there is parts of it that's about sex, but it's not all about sex. There are some very real life things. So it's just this very big ensemble piece, and really blown away by the talent that's involved in it. And it's very intimidating at the same time, like to just think you're going to get to work with all of these people and be surrounded by this ridiculous talent.
Now, are
you,
you a good
yourself?
Guy in this, or are you a bad guy, or have you gone back to your romantic?
I'm definitely a good guy in this, for sure. There are no bad guys in this. There are just real people who have disagreements, and that doesn't make them bad. It just means, like, maybe you were a jerk today and you treated your friend poorly, but it's not going to end the friendship. It just means you guys have to figure out how to work through it, which is, you know, it's pretty real to life. We all have arguments with our friends. It's, you're not going to kick them to the curb necessarily. It's just like, okay, let's learn how to apologize and be good to each other.
So, hey, Ronnie, as we run out of time, because I want to be respectful, because, you know, your lifestyle is the rich and famous, and I don't want to overextend our welcome here, because I want you to come back as we get closer to, you know, the movie and that type of stuff, have you and all the other stars come back and promo the big premiere. Where do you like your fans to stalk you on social media? Where do you like to hang out with folks?
You know, I'm really bad at Twitter. I am on Twitter at Real Ronnie Kerr, but the only thing I do on Twitter is talk to my friend Stephen Wallum, who was on Nurse Jackie. That Stephen's great. You should have him on. He's amazing.
We're friends.
That's
there.
Really
yeah,
all
I know
I,
him, so yeah.
Oh, you do? Yeah, he's great. But I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I try and answer everybody. You know, it's tough. You know, you get Facebook, it's, you know, you get a lot of messages. But so any of those platforms, you can find me on. I only really like post pictures on Instagram. I like, people will send messages and I never read them on Instagram ever, but I do read every Facebook message. And I 99% of the time reply to every single person. I will literally take 2 hours out of my week and just sit and answer emails.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, do it now before
you know,
things really explode. So then you can have your team of people do that for you.
Yeah, that's what will happen, I'm sure.
Okay. Well,
and
Ronnie,
I just
want
to give one shout out to Josh.
Yes,
so,
please.
Josh, if you're listening, shout out to you. That's it.
Okay.
That's my one shout out.
Ronnie, you have to come back. So just like Erica, you have an open door. We'll talk offline.
She's
about
amazing,
when we get to
have. By the way.
What an inspiration.
Yeah, she's awesome. I'm a big fan for sure.
Well, let's get you and everybody else that's going to be in the movie scheduled. We'll do like one big super spectacular or something like that as we get closer to having that all come out. So know that we'd love to have you back anytime you want. Right on.
Yeah.
So everybody, it's Ronnie Kerr. There's a link to his Facebook fan page right here on the show page. Go check that out. Go like him. We're going to have another commercial break from our friends at Rainbow Brew, and we'll be right back with Rob and I talking about who knows what right after this.
Yeah.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the queen bean, a proud sponsor of The Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
There we go. I think we might have had a little technical difficulty there, but we had our commercial finally show up. So, Rob, what a fun show we've had so far. And we've got another 25 minutes left.
Yeah, fascinating people. It's we could have gone on and on with each one of them.
With both of them, which is, you know, and I felt bad because I told Erica earlier in the week, she goes, I really want to come on and talk about this. And I'm like, how are we going to figure this out? Because, you know, she had a specific time schedule that she wanted to try to work in and also talk about the vagina monologues. I said, the only way we can do this is if we start the show early. And I said, Rob, would you be okay with that? And, you know, kind of explained everything. And before I could even finish the thing, he's like, yes, tell her yes before she changes her mind.
Yeah, exactly.
That was cool.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, very important issue. And it's, you know, the thing that people don't realize as they're talking about this is even in the discussions of it, it really hurts people. I mean, it hurts people like Erica because we're talking about them behind their back. We're talking about them behind their backs about where they get to go to the restroom. Like, any of our business. And it's
we've kind of talked about this before, and I'm frustrated at this because, you know, without mentioning names, and these are a couple of names that I won't mention because it just doesn't help anybody's cause because the positions just aren't going to change. And I've actually had to go in and unfollow things that they're posting about, and then even them at times, I just have to have like a 60-90 day break where they're posting, well, this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and I just keep going, I've met you, and I said, you've been nothing but pleasant and charming and accepting and wonderful and loving and everything to my face multiple times, and you've been nothing but a friend to me, and then you make these really horrific statements about, well, in this case, it's, you know, the transgender, you know, the bathroom bills and all of these things. And the things that you say, and it just makes me go, your account is either hacked by an alter ego or this is really who you are. And you feel comfortable saying these things in a social media format because it makes you, you know, not as threatening to say something like that in person. Because it just really gives me great cause because I now go, I don't know if I can really be friends with these people. And these are people that I liked, at least I did.
Right. Well, and that's part of the issue with this discussion is there are people, and it's true of the whole LGBT discussion, because the weird thing is that if you dissect LGBT up, each one of the people in those groups has had and come across different challenges. But what universally happens is the people who attack, the people who are, you know, trying to throw transgender people out of bathrooms, that are denying loving couples, you know, services, that are, you know, wanting to prevent, you know, loving couples and families from being married and protecting their children. All of the people who are against that then want to turn themselves into victims because of their opinions about other people. And it's, you know, they don't get that that's a line that those of us on the other side aren't asking for. You know, we're not asking to go into any straight people's house and change them whatsoever. We don't want to change their marriage. We don't want to change their family. We don't want to change where they go to the restroom. We don't want to change any of that. But the fact that they want to be able to criticize and judge and then be held up in high regard because they've judged, that's a whole different thing.
Ugh, it just makes me sick. You know, and then, you know, the other things that, you know, you read about and we see, and we can just talk about how ridiculous this is all night long, but it's like, well, you know, we need to verify, dun, da, dun, da, dun. And it's like, Have you seen the meme that's out there about some, you know, somebody that has, of course, a crazy look on their faces, and, you know, they're looking underneath the bathroom stall, and the caption is something like, "I'm just checking to see if you've got the right equipment because I don't want to make you make me feel uncomfortable," you know, and that somebody's spying on somebody, and the person sitting there going to the bathroom is like, "What?"
Oh, I know. I do not want to check out anybody else in the bathroom.
No, at all.
You know, I don't
ever
don't
in a million years
care.
Want right yeah. ever. So
ever.
Ever.
It's like there will not be an exception to this rule. Ever.
Ever. Right. So, I'm at such a loss with this because, you know, I feel that our country is just we are either really that dumb. And we may be. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. But
there is an aspect to this. There is an aspect to it, just to put it in context. Because I wrote an article about a year ago. And the reason I wrote this article, and I'll tell you what it is in a second, is because a lesbian mom had put an article out there about sending her sons to the men's room.
Oh, and
she had all this fear about what it was like in there and how to tell them how to use it and, you know, how to protect them. And, you know, it was just this predator stomping ground and all of these things in this article. And when I read the article, I was like, oh, no, this is so full of paranoia and fear and without foundation. So I wrote an article called A Lesbian and Single Mom's Guide to the Men's Room. And what this article was just point by point the reasons they didn't need to be afraid to send their sons into the restroom. It's a safe space. It's a smelly space. It's not a space I want to hang out with in a long time, but, you know, it's a safe space. And, you know, they had gone out on, like, YouTube and sent all these homophobic videos about, you know, what not to do in the men's room because they'll think you're cruising you, which is, they were tongue-in-cheek jokes that were made, you know, to, you know, about homophobia in the restroom, basically. They weren't real. So I wrote this article and put it out there for these moms because these moms did have this stranger danger fear of men invading restrooms after children. And so that's what a lot of the anti-gay people are leveraging right now, is they're leveraging a public that has stranger danger fear. Now, the fact of the matter is, and this is what I wrote about in the article, that pedophiles are not likely to do that, you know, in any circumstance. They do not invade kids in public spaces like that. What they do with the vast majority of people that you do have to be careful of is they try to get close to your family as an old family friend, and, you know, so that you trust them and you'll leave them alone with your child. And then that's when they do things. And that has been by astronomical means or astronomical looks, that is the demographic. That is what a child molester really looks like. And so we spend a lot of time being afraid of something that we don't need to be.
Right. Well, maybe if you can go back and refine that post and maybe put that up, that would be interesting to, you know, maybe take a fresh look at.
Yeah. I posted on the Evol Equals Facebook page. I'll post on R-rated LGBT group. Which,
would you? I think that's important. And by the way, I always hyperlink Rob's name to the Evolve Equals page on Facebook. So if you're ever going, you know, where can I find out more about Rob? You know, it's like everybody. We've got 7,000 things to go tag. I've just hyperlinked his name to the Evolve Equals page. So you can click his name there and go there. But yes, please put that back up.
Right. But there was one other thing you mentioned before I want to point out that's going on in the current news, you know, LGBT-wise, is that a video has surfaced from the Jehovah's Witness. It is a cartoon. And it is a cartoon of a little girl who comes home from school and she goes, "Mommy, my friend so-and-so, you know, we drew pictures of our families and I drew a picture of us and here's my picture of us. And, oh, she drew a picture of her family and she has two mommies." And teacher says, you know, "Oh, that's great because people should love each other." And in this cartoon, the mother goes to her, "Well, That's not what Jehovah wants. And Jehovah, you know, won't let you into heaven if you're in that kind of thing. And, you know, you need to go talk to your friend and tell her the promise of the promise, you know, what happens after the hereafter. And, you know, basically coaching this child to go tell another child that they were going to hell because of what their family was like. And it is this, you know, it is so icky and child abusive, especially to put that, you know, in a child accessible cartoon and suggest children treat each other in school that way. Mm-hmm. It's just very bizarre. I mean, can you imagine for a nanosecond if gay people put together a cartoon for kids in LGBT families and said, ooh, this is a Christian. You know, here's how you go attack their family. I mean, the screams would be hurt.
Yeah. You know, it's just, it's this mindset of, and you know, I'm definitely the pot calling the kettle black in a lot of things, but I'm really just, I'm over all of these groups being very self-righteous and so, oh, we are so much better than you and you must think the way we do. Otherwise you're horrible. And it doesn't even need to be religious. It could be political. It could be whatever, but I'm so over that, you know, and I see so much of that on social media and I just go unfollow. Cause I just, I don't have the interest or energy to, you know, have that yuck, you know, just permeate everything. Cause I don't even really watch the news on, you know, network news or any that type of stuff. And I glance at the headlines periodically just to, you know, say, oh, okay, this is kind of a current event that's going on. But boy, I'll tell you, anything that's like really negative or negative folks on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, I just unfollow. Cause it's like, I just don't even want to have that. I don't want to waste my energy seeing that hatred.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse before it gets better because we're in election year. And to your point that, you know, people don't even have to do this around existing things. They, you know, it's their political parties. I mean, the people like Bernie Sanders versus people like Hillary Clinton, it's, you know, there are fights going on there. And, you know, interesting this week, you know, again, going back to current events, you know, the cheese now stands alone on the Republican side. Because everybody is gone except for Donald Trump. And I think that can be, depending who you talk to, a very scary proposition. You know, in one sense, I have to say all the discussion of a brokered convention where they were going to, you know, deny him the nomination, but, you know, work somebody else into it was a little bit appalling to me just because it, you know, it totally negates the voice of the population, you know, right or wrong. You know, I'm not thrilled they elected Trump or that they've put Trump in that position, but they did. And to then go back and go, you know, okay, well, our little superdelegates, they know better and we're electing Ted Cruz instead. You know, that just seemed, you know, bad.
Equally horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there's one thing, though, speaking of Ted Cruz and, you know, boy, did he flame out this week in a massive way. But
I was so desperate. I thought that when he brought, you know, Carly Fiorina in, I'm like, you don't have a vice presidential nomination until, you know, you have the nomination yourself. So, okay, this is a huge Hail Mary. And I just thought, well, okay, you know. You bring Carly in so she can fire everybody on your campaign team, I think. That must have been it.
I have to say, I would not want to be Carly Fiorina. I mean, the woman's resume is, you know, she, at some point here, she's going to have a win because she needs one. I mean, she's a failed CEO who was forced out of her company. She ran for the Senate, lost. She ran for president, lost. She was named vice president candidate for like a week and a half, gone. I mean, it's like, you know, okay, boy, your head must hurt pounding it against that stone wall. I mean,
I don't have any sympathy for her, and I don't have any ill will towards her either. Because when she left HP, I don't know what kind of golden parachute that she got, but it wasn't like, you know, now you're going to have to go on welfare and get some food stamps. It's like, okay, take your $100 million severance package and leave and, you know, go away. So I have zero, you know, she's just looking for something to do. So the woman is not like hurting for a paycheck.
Why do we send her a knitting kit or something, or, you know, mm-hmm. or you
yeah.
know, painting or, you know,
give her, we'll have her go to like one of those wine and paint things, and she can just, you know, maybe get a franchise.
There you go. Yeah, that would be a good thing. But one of the things about Ted Cruz, though, that is significant is that he was courting the anti-gay people of Indiana, the social conservative,
mm-hmm.
and that was a failed strategy, which is a very good thing for us, because what that's saying is we are not no longer, we, and I mean LGBT, including the transgender issue, we are not the political scapegoat that we once were. We are not the magic ticket for conservatives that go out and bash us, and that means spell success for them. It no longer does. People are no longer interested in that bloodshed. Now, Trump has turned the paradigm and picked up whole new groups to be anti about. And, you know, that has led to his success. But we're no longer the golden pick for that.
Well, I think the next couple of months are going to be hugely interesting. And, you know, I would like to talk about the Democratic, you know, things that are going on. But I think, you know, it's probably for that, it's just best to watch how that unfolds. But it'll be interesting to see what happens on election night. That's
right.
For sure.
Okay, there is one point that, and I don't know how you feel about this, because, you know, I know this stuff is not as interesting to you as it is to me, but I am so tired, so, so tired of living in California and having this stuff all wrapped up before it even gets to us.
Oh, you mean with 0% reporting, we're now projecting that so-and-so is won?
In the primary, our primary is not for a month. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
and California is huge. There's still several huge states.
Yeah. We don't get to be part of the voice that makes these decisions. They're gone before they get to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's decided by Iowa and Connecticut and, you know, all those places. And it's like, you know, we need our primary moved up, is I guess my point.
Well, then, okay, if we're going to have all the primaries moved up, then why do we even need a primary? Why just can't we have, you know, 12 ding-dong, you know, Republican nominees and 5 or 6 ding-dong Democratic nominees and 2 or 3 independents and just avoid, you know, the whatever. So, what, you know, we just say, okay, you need to have X number of whatever verified signatures on the ballots, and then you're going to be on the states. And, you know, tough luck, Garrett Miller. You didn't get enough signatures in California to be on the ballot. And, you know, California has 100 delegates up for grabs. Well, too bad for you.
Yeah.
And then just let everybody go vote. And then, and,
well,
you know,
there are countries
that have a 15-way race. And that's American Idol.
Yeah. Well, there are countries that have their political system set up that way, where everybody's running and, you know, the party kind of gets in based on that. And then the leader is elected out of that. But also here in California, when they impeached or recalled Gray Davis,
mm-hmm.
and then they had the special election after that, it was exactly that way, where everybody who was running. And
all the crazy people
just, you know, rose to the top of that. But personally, for me, I don't mind that they have a primary system where we elect one from each party and then we have a general. As long as we all get, you know, I would like to see that happen all at once, though. And the reason I say that is because the parties do have some real differentiation. And it is kind of nice that the candidate has to sell themselves to that base first. And then they go out in this matchup against each other, where they then have to modify themselves for the population. I think, you know, a lot of people find that basically disgusting that they do that, but I find it kind of fascinating and telling about what kind of leader they're going to be.
So I'm okay with that.
I think they're all bought and paid for. That's the kind of leaders I think that we've got. But by the way, I want to send a big hello to Nick Brister out of Texas tonight for listening into the show while Ronnie was on. Thank you, Nick, for tuning in. I think you may be a first time listener. So thank you for listening to the Rated LGBT Radio this Thursday night. But I had to get that in before the show's over, too.
Yeah. Very good. We love our listeners.
Love them. So, okay. So real quick, Rob, we've only got 5 minutes left, which means, you know, I say real quick. So for 4.5 minutes, Rob, talk about. So tell us again, what's happening on Out in Santa Cruz this Saturday night at 7 p.m.?
So Out in Santa Cruz this week, I have, first of all, my co-host, Steph Taylor, will not be on the show. She is attending the local Queer Youth Leadership Awards, which is a really, really cool event that is local to Santa Cruz and should be everywhere. But honoring, you know, gay, LGBT, queer teens who've accomplished things at their young age. But I will be having on my show Dr. Dennis C. Miller, who wrote a book called Mopping Floors to CEO. And it's from, it is about basically how to overcome depression, the stigma of depression, and find happiness. And since, just similar to our conversation with Erica, so many LGBT people grapple with being gay and the stigma of being LGBT and then have to deal with depression too. And it can be a killer. And so, we're going to have the good doctor on and we're going to talk about it.
Well, I think that will be interesting because, you know, and I've had bouts of depression. Now I have no idea if they have anything to do with being in the LGBT community. I have a tendency to think that it's not related to that, but I will tell you, depression sucks. And, you know, it's getting out of that funk is just really, really, really hard. So I'm excited to hear what Dr. Miller has to say on Saturday. That'll be a good show for sure.
And I am, you know, leverage, hint, 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 you know, I need a co-host for it and I can never get enough of you. So,
okay. I've made all kinds of commitments for Saturday, too numerous to count on air. So I won't try to do that, but I will certainly take that into consideration and see what we can make happen. Cause anytime I get a chance to hang out with you, Rob, and especially on Out in Santa Cruz, that, you know, as fun as doing this show is, okay, this is what I, okay. So Rob, get ready to blush. Cause I'm going to talk about you for just a second. As much as this show is fun to do for me and I love it. And I love when you come on and be my co-host. I love the guests. I love all of that. Okay. But when I listen to Out in Santa Cruz, I always go, oh, this is what like a real radio station show sounds like. Cause you know, there's the news at the beginning. There's a break at the 20 and the 40. You end exactly right on time, you know, and it's, you know, it's really filled with a lot more structure than just, okay, let's chat for 90 minutes. And then if we get to commercials, we get to commercials, but you know, we're just going to chat for 90 minutes tonight. Cause that's really what we do.
Well, come on. So don't make me beg on the air.
Okay. But so I'm excited for that. Thank you for that. So again, you know, tonight we had Erica Irvin on. She was talking about the Vagina Monologues. Her performance on Saturday night goes to support V-Day. There's links for both of these on the show page. You can buy your tickets now. All of the proceeds on Saturday night show go directly to support that charity. And my good friend Sheena Metal is directing the Vagina Monologues for this, I don't know, like 6th or 7th year in a row. So it was sold out last Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and this Friday and Saturday are the last performances during this run. So if you get a chance to go watch it, it's sold out practically. And you have all of these fantastic actresses who come in and play the different roles, and it will be something that you'll want to see. So I hope that you will do that. For everybody else, we have rated, what are we doing? It's Thursday night. We've got Friday night dance party tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific time with Madeline Victoria. She's an Academia Music Award winner. We're going to be playing her music in hour one. Hour two will be your calls. And then on Saturday morning at Super Gay Radio with my co-host Paul Emery, he has brought on Frank Carselli, who plays Miss Viola. That's his drag character, Miss Viola, and Frank's going to talk about the RuPaul review, and then of course Aunt Barbara will talk about Tupperware until we are so fresh and stay free and clean and salt and peppery and all of that good stuff that you'll probably want to be a Tupperware distributor on your own. Rob, about 20 seconds left. Any last words of wisdom you want to share with folks before we go?
Just buy Blonde Jesus.
There you go. Yep. Go to GarrettMiller.com. Yeah, okay, here's the thing. If you go to GarrettMiller.com, shameless plug of the night, and buy my CD, Blonde Jesus, it's 10 bucks, folks. So it's, you know, better than a tall cup of Starbucks coffee. I will actually get the money, believe it or not. And I use every dime from my music sales, and I put that back into making new music. So if you like the music that you hear on Blonde Jesus, just know that I'll be making more, and it will be thanks
and
to you.
I love the music on Blonde Jesus.
Yeah. And that's an unsolicited paid endorsement. Thank you, Rob. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you live tomorrow.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Garrett.